Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Back by popular demand, we are telling some more military stories. This is Volume 5 of the series. Some subscribers sent in some pretty creepy stories for you guys to enjoy today. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it be a military story or something different, be sure to submit that at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that keep this channel going. Joining me today is my good friend Let's Read. I'm sure most of you know who that is, but if you do not, please check out his channel if you enjoy his voice. He tells a lot of scary stories and uploads them almost daily. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy military stories. I would like to relay you a story that was told to me over 20 years ago, sometime in 1998. Even though I am Polish, my great-grandfather was German, and this story revolves around his service aboard the German submarine U-94 during the Second World War. For the purpose of simplicity, I shall call him Karl throughout this tale. Karl was born in the town of Rendsburg, not far outside of the city of Kiel, in 1897. In 1914, at the age of 17, he signed on with the Imperial German Navy, just after the outbreak of the First World War. While he was initially posted ashore as a dockyard worker, in 1915 he found himself assigned to the battleship Kaiserin as a member of the lookout crew. He served aboard the Kaiserin for the rest of the conflict, having risen to the position of junior navigation officer by the war's end. After the German surrender in 1918, Karl spent a year and a half in a prisoner of war camp in Scotland before returning home in early 1920. It was during the 1920s that Karl got himself married and had four children, moving to the city of Wilhelmshaven to make up work in the shipyards there. During the 1930s, however, the family fell in hard times, and Karl began to reconsider going back to the military to help put food on the table. As the Second World War came nearer and nearer to reality, Karl finally decided to re-enlist in the new German Kriegsmarine. In 1938, due to his age and previous experience, he was immediately given the position of Chief Navigation Officer on board the light cruiser Leipzig. It was during this time that he began to show an interest in submarines, and in 1939 he requested that he be transferred to one. In August of 1940, his wish was granted, and he was reassigned to the submarine U-94, which had just been commissioned into the fleet. Karl was assigned as the chief navigator aboard the vessel, under the command of Captain Herbert Kupcich. This submarine would be his home for nearly a whole year, and the vessel would certainly see its fair share of successes against Allied merchants shipping throughout 1940 and 1941. After an initial training cruise and four war patrols, U-94 managed to sink 12 ships that totaled nearly 70,000 tons while sailing around the North Atlantic. For its fifth patrol, however, the submarine was ordered to head in a different direction, this time southward toward the Azores Islands. The patrol began on July 12, 1941, with the ship sailing out of the port of Lorient in German-occupied France. Whilst on the way to the operation area, plans were changed and instead the submarine was ordered to meet up with a group of other U-boats to form a wolf pack to patrol together. The date for the meetup was set for July 22nd. However, 2 days beforehand on July 19th, U-9-4 was forced to dive after the watch crew had spotted aircraft flying above the submarine. The ship had already passed through the Azores Islands and back out into the open ocean, so it was believed by the captain that she could dive to her limit without having to worry about hitting the ocean floor. However, Carl ordered the sonar operator to perform a depth measurement anyway, just to be safe. They were both astonished when they came back with a reading that said they were less than 60 meters of room between the crashed diving submarine and whatever was below it. Thus, the boat had to cancel her emergency dive and move to a new area to attempt it again. After these maneuvers were completed, the aircraft appeared to have turned away, so Captain Kuppich ordered the standard dive and additional depth check. This time, the sonar showed that we were less than 20 meters from whatever was under us. Again, the dive was canceled, and the captain and four members of the crew went out to see what was happening, to assess the situation. Now, with the ship on the surface and a full stop, the sonar operator and Carl struggled to figure out what was going on, as every time the operator would send the ship on the surface at a full stop and do another depth check, the distance between the submarine and the object would get shorter and shorter. Finally, after the distance closed to less than 5 meters, the sonar operator turned to Carl and said, "Sir, there's got to be something under this boat." Moments later, the U-boat suddenly shook violently, and shortly afterward, the captain and the four other crewmen who were on the deck rushed back into the submarine, with the captain shouting out an order for the ship to go full speed ahead to change course. After a half an hour of sailing, the boat was ordered to slow her speed and do another depth measurement. From then on, sonar readings came back normal, and no object was detected again. After the incident had passed, the atmosphere had cooled down. Carl and the other officers conversed with the captain, and he ordered that nothing was to be said of what had happened, and that the submarine would finish her mission as originally planned. Indeed, Captain Kuppich never reported the incident of the U-9-4's logbook or in any other way, written or verbal. The crew was thoroughly spooked from the incident, and it heavily affected morale, but nothing else occurred on the rest of the patrol. U-9-4 completed her mission and returned to port on August 16, 1941. Shortly thereafter, the captain transferred to another submarine, which in turn led to most of the crew asking to be transferred as well, including Carl. Indeed, he was sent off the boat and was stationed back on shore, where he remained for the rest of the war. Carl lived a very long life before passing away early in 2001 at the age of 103. He was alive to tell this story himself when I was a young boy. I've since asked my grandfather, who was Carl's son, if the story was true, and he claimed that he had always been told the same story as well, both as a child and an adult. It has always baffled me, and I have never been able to find any other reference to this incident in any information that is available on U-9-4. I'm not sure what to think of it, and my great-grandfather Carl never liked to speculate about it, so I'm really left with nothing other than a story. Nonetheless, be it a sea creature or some uncharted seamount, it really terrifies me what may lurk in the oceans of our planet.
I'm from Michigan, however I joined the Army when I was 21 and got stationed out in Colorado. Fort Carson, to be exact. I am a single male, so I lived in the barracks with a roommate. My roommate was from New Mexico and is of Navajo descent. We didn't really talk, and I wouldn't say we were friends, but we had a conversation from time to time. One day I was looking up creepypastas and heard about Wendigos and Skinwalkers. The more I learned about them, the more interested I became in them. Then we went on rotation to Europe, and I forgot all about them until we went to Germany, where we didn't do much but sit around. That is where my fascination with them started again. I would go to sleep listening to Skinwalker stories. Something about being scared and sleeping is invigorating to me. I know, it's weird. In the stories, it would always say don't ask a Navajo tribe member about them because they will shut you down. Well, me being me, I found my roommate, let's call him Justin, and I asked if he believes in them. Surprisingly, he didn't shut me down. He got kind of excited and said, "Yeah, dude, I haven't seen one, but I want to. My parents used to tell me about them." About 2 months later, we headed back to the States, did our army stuff, and went on with our lives. Once again, I forgot about the skinwalkers and wendigos until I didn't. I like to go on drives and listen to music. Relaxing to me, I guess. I usually go during the day because the route I take has no lights on it for miles at a time. Well, at work one day, we were really busy and really stressed out. I needed to relax, so I decided I would go on a drive. It was about 9:45 p.m. For anyone who has been on Fort Carson, I headed out Gate 1. Now, out of Gate 1, you have three options. Go to the right, which will bring you to downtown Colorado Springs. Go straight, which brings you somewhere, but I never took it. Or go left, which brings you on a winding road through the foothills of the mountains. Naturally, I went left. I started driving with the pitch-black road, my music blaring and unwinding. I got about half of my usual drive when I heard a noise. It was the highest-pitched, bloodiest-sounding scream I'd ever heard. I heard it over my music. I turned down my music, not knowing what just happened. Again, I heard it, only a little louder. Out of nowhere, the smell of rotten eggs fills the air. I decided that now was a good time to turn around. I pull off to a side road and flip a U-turn. That's when I saw it in my rearview mirror. It lightened up with the red of my brake lights. A skinwalker. Since it was dark out and the red light didn't do much, I couldn't make out super specific details, but I saw these bright yellow eyes that pierced through the night. It had antlers on its head, and it was standing on its back feet. I sat there for what seemed like forever, frozen in fear. It started to walk towards my car. With all my might, I told my body to move, and move now. It didn't listen. I was frozen. It got closer. All of a sudden, my phone rings and breaks me out of my trance. I let off the brake and put the pedal to the floor. The entire way home, I was going 70 to 80 miles per hour, looking in my rearview mirror every 5 seconds. I swear I saw it a few times. I figured it was chasing me because the smell didn't go away until I got to Gate 5 of Fort Carson. I scanned my CAC and sped back to the barracks. Once I got back, I ran inside, not talking to anyone on the way. I got into my room and sat on my bed wondering if what just happened was real. I finally looked at my phone to see who called. Luckily, my best friend, we'll call him Steve, called to get me on Xbox to play. I had another encounter with a skinwalker. Not as long or as scary as the first one. We were in the field down south in Colorado, in Pinyon Canyon. It was close to the end of our 3-week field problem. We dug foxholes at night and somebody had to take first watch. Of course, that someone was me. The foxhole was about 100 meters away from our line of trucks. I get into it and once again I start to smell rotten eggs. I don't think much of it because the cooks were always throwing away old food. I scan the area over and over looking for Op 4 when my friend Steve then yells out to me, "Hey, we don't have to do guard tonight. Safety, stand down." From a good 50 meters away, I yell back, acknowledging him. Then, from in front of me, I hear, "Hey, you don't have to do guard." In Steve's voice, but in a lower, raspy voice. I look in the direction it came from, and there was Steve, standing in the tree line. I couldn't believe it. This time I knew it was a skinwalker, because that explains the smell, and Steve being on the other side of the concertina wire. The rest of the field problem went normally, and I haven't had an encounter since. I have moved back to Michigan and still living a happy life. However, these encounters pop into my head every now and again.
I recently shared my creepy experience with weird-looking people scaring the heck out of me. We went somewhere much more terrifying this time. A remote little Marine Corps base called Bridgeport. It's in a national forest just north of Yosemite. It was built to train Marines in the art of mountain warfare. There's a lot of mountains. It's cold, it's windy, and if you ever go there, you'll hate your life too. Anyway, when we first get there, we stay in these creepy concrete huts with bunk beds in them. There are a bathroom and some showers, and that's about it. You fight over the outlets to charge your electronics, and there's not really any heat besides a bunch of Marines cramped into one area. The first few days are miserable. Your body has to adjust to the new altitude. The air has less oxygen, so physical work and exercise play out in slow motion. Oh, and you constantly are tired, and all you want to do is sleep. There isn't much in terms of fresh food, and things can get pretty bleak if you have the wrong mindset. You wouldn't believe me if I told you these were the better times. Eventually, we marched up into the mountains, carrying our ridiculously heavy packs, stuffed to the brim with warming layers, food, water, and nicotine. The first few days were easy. We would hike all day and stop to rest and learn a few things of survival and such. There were some snow on the lower parts, but not a ton, thankfully. Around the fourth night, someone had the awesome idea of making us practice our nighttime navigation skills. I am a pretty decent navigator myself, so I was up for the challenge. No big deal. They hand out the compasses, maps, and protractors, and set up an elaborate system of how to get to the finish line. I was staggered, so people weren't walking all over each other. This is where things get interesting. I'm in the woods. It's dark and cold. I hate my life, so I'm stumbling through the trees and brush loud as hell without a care in the world. I just want to finish this dumb thing so I can get to sleep. I get to my first point easily because there is some moonlight shining through the trees. The second one was placed in a river, and I still remember how livid I was, standing in the river, copying down the word donkey, etched into an ammo can at the top of a rock, in a freezing cold river. Wet boots will drive a man insane. I stop to squeeze out the moisture from my socks, and I get this primal feeling that I'm being watched. I stand completely still, and all I can hear is my heart beating. No wind or wildlife, just me. My first thought is that it's a Marine trying to piggyback off my success. I put my soggy socks back on, put my boots on as well, and do what anyone would do. I crest the next hill and stop so I could listen. Nothing. Maybe I'm just freaking the heck out. Screw this. I keep walking. 10 minutes later, I get to that same feeling once more. Any rookie stalker knows that you have to match the person's steps so that they can't hear what you're doing, obviously. So I start to randomly stop or change my step. After a few wholehearted tries, I don't hear any footsteps, but I do hear breathing. If it's a mountain lion or something crazy, I have no choice but to keep walking, and I hope all I can do is pull my dull Gerber knife out in time. About this time, I get to my third point and plot my final point. It's near a road, so I try to cut straight east and literally book it up the road. I still feel like I was being followed the entire time, but I felt safer now because I could hear the low roar of a Humvee engine up the road. Looking back, I led whatever it was right to the rest of us. That was a dumb mistake. Nothing else happens that night. Everyone else gives up and just uses the roads to make it to camp. Those who don't make it back are told to walk towards the sound of a beeping horn. Funny, I finally get to the sleep and the safety of numbers. We use the next day to remediate our nighttime and land nav skills and refuel our bodies with food. Once the sun sets, we march off into the mountains in a file. Unfortunately, since I carry a rocket launcher, my natural position is in the back, but not the very last, so that's a positive. We spend the early night hiking. We were moving very fast and probably 20 meters spaced apart. At times, it was common to lose sight of each other. All of us were slowly getting exhausted. Suddenly, it just gets dark, like the ambient light is just being absorbed. I get the same primal fear. Extreme silence once again engulfs us. I keep walking without a word until I hear someone, probably the guy behind me, call my name. I turn around and he looks at me like I'm an idiot. What the heck, dude? Keep going. They're gonna lose us. Okay, weird. Who called my name? I spin back around and try to see my way through the brush for the guy in front of me. I get a glimpse of him and discreetly yell at him to slow down, but he doesn't hear me. What the heck? About the same time, I hear from the dude behind me, "Dude, what the heck is that?" I heard a light rustling of leaves and some twig, but that was it. I run back maybe 15 meters, which isn't far, but at night it is. There's nothing but his pack on the ground and his rifle. I call out his name. Nothing. I reach for my radio, and it's dead. I turn on both of my flashlights, and they're dead. I started yelling. I blow the whistle that they made me pack, but nothing was working. I don't know how long it took them to realize I was missing, and how they backtracked their way to me, but it felt like hours. I could feel whatever it was just out there, waiting, toying with me. I told them everything, and they were convinced the guy just got lost. They all spread out and looked for him for a few hours, but ultimately never came up with anything. Sometime the next morning, one of the hippie park volunteers found him 30 kilometers away across multiple mountains. He was bleeding from his ears and didn't even know his name. Of course, he was in extreme hypothermia and he had tons of bruises on him, but no severe bleeding. They ended up getting a helicopter to take him to the closest hospital. Following that mysterious incident, I was told that I was going to be sent down the mountain to answer a few questions. To be honest, I was relieved. It was cold, and I didn't want to hike anymore. Everyone else in my company sort of just believed what they were told. He came down with mountain sickness and just walked 30 kilometers over the course of a few hours. I tried to tell a few people about all the creepy stuff I had been noticing, just to make sure I'm not going crazy. Before anyone could respond, my squad leader pulled me aside and told me, "Don't talk about these things, okay?" Maybe he knew something I didn't, but yeah, cool. They sent us up here, knowing something was off. Typical military BS. Just stick our heads in the sand and pretend everything is great when everything is not. I was glad I was leaving for a few days, but there was nothing but complete dread whenever the idea of coming back entered my mind. I used to work in this small administration office in the military. This guy I knew was a mechanic named Larry. He was not exactly the most well-groomed guy. He didn't have any military bearing at all. The thing is, though, he was a nice guy. He reminded me of a person who may have been bullied or something. We worked side by side in this small room for an entire deployment, and sometime afterward. We had conversations and got to know each other fairly well. He was a higher rank than me, and I haven't had a clue how he got there. We never really talked shop. Mostly we talked about movies. He loved movies. No one else liked him, though. Some made fun of him or talked about him behind his back. I didn't participate in that, and it made me feel like I was his only friend. It freaks me out thinking back on it. I decided to get out of the military, and I went back home and eventually moved to Texas. I met the perfect woman for me. We ended up getting married in 2017. We honeymooned in southern Mexico. While we were sitting poolside, I decided to upload some pics to Facebook and check and see what everyone was doing stateside. Then I see a familiar face on a mugshot. It was him. I spit on my drink. I couldn't believe it. As I read the article, I was in shock. I can't exactly describe the feeling. It was Larry. He was arrested for having CP. And a lot of it. Some of the people I served with were also posting about it, saying that they knew something was off with him. It made me feel uneasy that I didn't see that. I told my wife about it and I started thinking about our past conversations. He never really said anything off-putting that I can think of, but I do remember he would never let me touch his computer on deployment. That was a thing. It was normal for people to exchange movies, TV shows, and DVDs and such. Sometimes someone would get busy and have to leave and they trusted you just to put the computer back and the laptop back. Not him though, not Larry. He never traded movies with me despite that being all we ever talked about. I remember he was the only person with the movie Congo. I never did get that movie during deployment. It's a crying shame. You think you know someone? This happened about a year and a half ago. He still has a lot of time left in jail. He didn't belong in the military, but he looked like he did in the mugshot. I've been listening to this show for a long time and decided that I would share one of my own stories. I am active Navy and spent a little over 2 years in Seoul, Korea. Awesome experience. Tons of things to see. My work schedule was pretty nice. I only worked for half the month. We call it the Panama schedule, for those who don't know what I'm talking about. But anyways, a few times a year, my work would ask for volunteers to do a security detail that spanned over a whole month. It consisted of tops 4 guys for the whole month. We were given house, individual rooms, kitchen, gym, etc. This assignment was on a military base, but on that military base, our house and facilities were also gated and only cleared members, us 4 for that month, were allowed in. You had to have a code to get inside our gate, as well as a code to get inside the house. Pretty well secured, to say the least. There were 2 buildings within our gated secured area, one being the house we lived in, and no more than 30 feet away was the other building we worked out of. Usually, one person working a watch shift. It was always manned. So I just get off my watch and go to the house to relax. I go about my nightly routine and take my uniform off and get ready to take a shower. Our bathroom has 1 shower and 3 toilet stalls. Not a big bathroom either. Anyways, I'm the only one awake. 1 guy is in the other building standing watch, and the other 2 are passed out in their private rooms. I turn the shower off and grab the towel. Directly in front of the shower is the wall, to one of the stalls, and I hear clear as day the sound of toilet paper roll being rolled as if someone was grabbing paper to wipe their butt. The typical dung, gung, gung sound. I figured someone was taking a massive turd. No big deal, right? I didn't say anything. Just continued drying off to pull the curtains back and walk to the sink. And as I look in the mirror to the stall floor to see if someone was there, there was no one. I opened the bathroom door because it was closed this whole time and the 2 people were still in their rooms. I knew I wasn't hearing things or tripping out, because it's impossible to get into the bathroom without the doors making any noise. Kind of weird. But here's my personal favorite encounter. It could have been within the same month I was already there at this facility, but can't say for certain because I did multiple trips to this place, and something always happens when I go. I got off watch, was watching a movie in the living room with the lights off, 2 guys sleeping in their rooms, doors closed, and the 4th person was in the other building working. Out of nowhere, I hear the front door, which is metal, being tugged really hard as if someone was trying to open it after they put the door code. The front door didn't open due to whoever putting the code in wrong. I've heard the same sound countless times. I was like, maybe a contractor who's supposed to be here tried to get in, but forgot the code, and now he's here at the rear entrance since there's no code, just a free swinging door. So, I waited a couple of seconds to see if anyone was going to walk in, and no one ever did. I get off the couch and go through the rear door to see if anyone was out there, and there wasn't anyone. The 2 people were still sleeping and the other was still working. Not a single car in the parking lot. I still can't figure out what it was. And no, it wasn't the wind either. It was dead still. But the one thing that makes me confident in what I heard and experienced was my last trip to this facility. Was when I was standing watch. 3 of my other guys come storming in, freaking out because they all experienced the same thing. It was super late at night. It was just 4 of us in total in our gated area, highly secure. Them 3 were watching a movie in the living room while I was in the building behind them, and they heard the sound of someone yanking on the front door trying to get in. There was no one on the compound. Not 1 car in the lot. It was just us 4. Every single one of them heard the same thing I did, and when they came into the building I was working in, I described my experience to them. It was exactly the same as theirs. Kinda creepy, but I dig stuff like this. There was also some papers randomly falling in my workplace, and sound of someone stomping on the floor in the workplace, but nothing like the experiences I just mentioned. And, before I forget, as soon as I reported to my base in Korea, One of the airmen I worked with said he saved a video from one of the security details because they caught a gray hazy figure panning across one of the cameras in the middle of the night. I never saw the video, but multiple people I worked with said they did see it and claimed that it was real. I'd say it's safe to say it's credible, but yeah, that's one of my many experiences. Hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for sharing it on the show. Thanks for listening to these strange and downright creepy military stories. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a military story or something different, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that keep this channel going. Much thanks and appreciation to my friend, Let's Read, who helped me read story number 2 today. If you enjoyed his voice and his reading, be sure to check out his channel. You can find the link to do so down in the description down below. Once again, thank you guys for always supporting the swamp. If you made it to the very end, be sure to comment "Jumping Jiminy" so we know that you did, and to confuse everybody who didn't make it. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.